This morning, I would like to read you a story. You can find it in many versions, but I chose this one because it has a little bit more of today's language. It seems about 2,500 years ago, in the Himalayan foothills of present-day Nepal, there lived in a great palace a king and his son. For the son, the king had a particularly grand idea. He would make the child's life perfect. The child would never know a moment of suffering. Every need, every desire would be accounted for at all times. Wouldn't that be a life? The king built high walls around the palace that prevented the prince from knowing about the outside world. He spoiled the child, lavishing him with food and gifts, surrounding him with servants who catered to every whim. And just as planned, the child grew up ignorant of routine cruelties of human experience. All of the prince's childhood went on like this. But despite endless luxury and opulence, the prince became a kind of a miserable young man. Soon, every experience felt empty and valueless. The problem was that no matter what his father gave him, it never seemed enough, never meant anything. So late one night, the prince snuck out of the palace to see what was beyond its walls. He had a servant drive him through the local village, and what he saw horrified him. For the first time in his life, the prince saw human suffering. He saw sick people, old people, homeless people, people in pain, even people dying. The prince returned to the palace and found himself in a sort of existential crisis. Not knowing how to process what he had seen, he got all emotional about everything, and yes, he complained a lot. And so is typical of a young man. The prince ended up blaming his father for the very thing that his father had tried to do for him. It was the riches, the princess thought, that had made him so miserable and that had made his life seem so meaningless. So he decided to run away. But the prince was more like his father than he knew. He had grand ideas too. He wouldn't just run away. He would give up his royalty, his family, and all of his possessions and live in the streets, sleeping like an animal in the dirt. There he would starve himself, torture himself, and beg for scraps of food from strangers for the rest of his life. The next night, the prince snuck out of the palace again, this time never to return. For years he lived as a bum, a discarded and forgotten remnant of society, like mud caked to the bottom of the social hierarchy. And as planned, the prince suffered greatly. He suffered through disease, hunger, pain, loneliness, and even decay. He confronted the brink of death itself, often limited to a single nut each day. A few years went by, then a few more, and then nothing happened. The prince began to notice that this life of suffering wasn't what it was all cracked up to be. It wasn't bringing him the insight he had desired. It wasn't revealing any deeper mystery of the world or even its ultimate purpose. In fact, the prince came to know what the rest of us have always kind of known: that suffering totally sucks. And it's not necessarily that meaningful either. And as with being rich, there's no value in suffering when it's done without purpose. And soon the prince came to the conclusion that his grand idea, like his father's, was in fact a terrible idea, and he should probably go do something else instead. Totally confused, the prince cleaned himself up and went and found a big tree near a river. He decided that he would sit under that tree and never get up until he came up with another grand idea. As legend goes, the confused prince sat under that tree for 49 days. And we will not delve into the biological viability of sitting in the same spot for 49 days. But let's just say that in that time, the prince came to a number of profound realizations. One of those realizations was this, that life itself is a form of suffering. The rich suffer because of their riches. The poor suffer because of their poverty. People without a family suffer because they have no family. People with a family suffer because of their family. People who pursue worldly pleasures suffer because of the worldly pleasures. And people who abstain from worldly pleasures suffer because of their abstention. This isn't to say that all suffering is equal. Some suffering is certainly more painful than other suffering. But we all must suffer nonetheless. Years later, the prince would build his own philosophy and share it with the world. And this would be the first and central tenet, that pain and loss are inevitable, and we should let go of trying to resist them. The prince would later become known as the Buddha. There's an old Buddhist koan from Zen master Linji. It goes like this. If you see the Buddha on the road, kill him. Obviously, this is not literal, but symbolic. Killing in general is not a good idea, although I must confess I do swat at flies in the summertime. If you see the Buddha on the road, kill him. The road represents your path to enlightenment, prayer, meditation, study. It's basically how you live your life. The road is your life. Whether you're Buddhist or not, your life, our life journeys are all a personal kind of road. The Buddha on this road of life serves as a symbol of whatever you have placed on the path, an idealized teacher, practice, or maybe even a trait. You might elevate a real-life teacher, hold up a particular way or method or practice as the best or only way, either through your own experience or something that has been shown to you, or you might demand perfectionism of yourself and others. It is human nature to have all sorts of things as symbolic of the Buddha. The road to enlightenment is littered with all sorts of decoys, pit stops, and false idols. It pays to be careful. It's a part of wisdom, and it's actually learned the hard way. In short, killing the Buddha can be interpreted as a way to keep the ego in check. In my understanding, it's also about minding what it is that we worship. Ralph Waldo Emerson, one of our Unitarian ancestors, observed, "A person will worship something. Have no doubt about that. We may think our tribute is paid in secret in the dark recesses of our heart, but it will out. That which dominates our imaginations and our thoughts will determine our lives and character. Therefore, it behooves us to be careful what we worship, for what we are worshiping, we are becoming." The prince in our reading became the Buddha through his witness and ultimately his personal experiences of suffering. His early life was sheltered from seeing the realities of pain, hunger, homelessness, illness, death. Once he went beyond the gates, however, he saw it all. Suffering was laid bare. Eventually, the prince gave up his sheltered existence and went out into the world. Through his own experience, he became familiar with all sorts of woe. You might say he was building up his capacity for empathy. His empathy quotient went from zero to max on his path to enlightenment. It is interesting, though, that the Buddha is credited with compassion. Compassion goes beyond empathy. You might outline the steps as this. First step being observing, putting yourself in a place to witness. The second step, empathy, feeling the suffering as if it were your own. And the third step, compassion, taking the next step and doing something about it. For me, the step number one is observation. It's in our heads. The second step, empathy, is in our hearts. And compassion is combining them both, living with our all. It's easy to see if we want to see. Our heart can be moved, and our being rational and loving people, we can put it all together and actually do something. And I believe that Jesus of the Christian scriptures is also a model for compassion. In the book of Matthew, we read, "For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit." Muhammad teaches in the Quran, "Have you seen him who belies the rewards and punishments of the hereafter? It is he who drives away the orphan and does not urge giving away the food to the poor. Give to the near of kin his due, and also to the needy and to the wayfarers. Do not squander your wealth wastefully, for those who squander wastefully are Satan's brothers, and Satan is ungrateful to his Lord." And the root of the Abrahamic tradition, the Hebrew text teaches in the book of Isaiah, "Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover them, and not to hide yourself from your own flesh? Then shall your light break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up speedily. Your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Eternal shall be your rear guard. If you shall pour yourself out for the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then shall your light rise in the darkness, and your gloom be as noonday. And the Eternal will guide you continually and satisfy your desire with good things and make your bones strong, and you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters fail not." My friends, there are many paths to enlightenment. The journey is ours to take. As Unitarian Universalists, though, I find it's easy to stay in the head and just read about enlightenment. I can imagine that all I need to do is know about those things and just kind of picture myself there. Wouldn't it work that way? I know there's suffering in the world. I read about it all the time. You should see the latest statistics. Did you read the latest book or article? Can you believe that policy change? Oh my goodness. Maybe we can form a discussion group and talk about it. Bring printouts, and maybe some pictures are good too. But sometimes my head knowledge comes face to face with suffering. I see the homeless person as I drive by. Sometimes they're even in a park or a doorway when I walk by. I see them, but they are faceless, nameless, kind of a background fixture. My empathy quotient is raised, though, when I recognize myself in the phrase, "There by grace go I." I'm not talking about pity, but about a recognition of shared suffering. But for grace or luck, I could have had that particular suffering instead of my own. I begin to see myself in the other person's situation. I see them as human, a brother, sister, sibling, parent, child, someone who is not wholly unlike myself. When I am so moved that I begin to act, I move from merely witnessing, feeling empathy, to having compassion. My head and my heart become engaged. I believe this is a core tenet of all religions, compassion in its fullness. Unlike many religions, however, Unitarian Universalism, there's no threat of hell or eternal damnation. If we fall short, well, we fall short. We are too enlightened to need that kind of prod. Do we do good work just because it is the right thing to do? And that works most of the time. Our journey, though, in that journey, we put up obstacles, idols, and detours. I like to call them squirrels. We even worship some of them as truth. I'm too busy. Work, hobbies, travel, whatever, they become roadblocks. We fail to see the gaps where we could indeed do something for others. I know this is true for me. Just look at my calendar. Or we can say, this is my cause. I'm standing right here and I'm sticking to it, by golly. It's good to focus, but curiosity and openness are also virtues. We could say, we don't have enough money. Now, it's true that our budget is short. We have to get the basics covered. But aren't there always resources when you really want to find them? Yep, that's true in my life. We can also say, I'm sorry, it's political. We confuse or use as an alibi IRS determinations of partisan political activity as a cover-up for not heeding the call for compassion. We let the government and politicians become the red herons and false idols to excuse ourselves from participation. We have fallen into the trap that if a social issue is seen as blue or red, left or right, Democrat or Republican, then we can't touch it. Wrong. I believe the homeless, the immigrant, and the marginalized don't care what color or party you represent. Give them shelter. Give them food. And then figure out how to get the situation stable. Get out front. Lead with compassion and let the politics fall where they may. In other words, kill the Buddha. knock down, and clear the excuses out of the path. Yes, there have been, are, and always will be great teachers. So learn what you can and go on. Yes, perfectionism is ideal, but don't let it get in the way of actually doing something. And yes, having a personal cause is good, but let's figure out how we can increase our impact by working together. This is a new year. As a congregation, we are about to vote on a brand new vision of who we are and what we can be and how we are together. The road we take as individuals and the road we choose as a congregation is our choice. It is up to us to figure out how to combine the head with the heart and actually walk on a path of compassion. Obstacles be damned, the road leads on. It is up to us which direction to take. As Unitarian Universalists, we can choose compassion if we will. No one will stop us either way. But if we choose the road less traveled, there are many guides along the way. The Buddha just happens to be one. May we learn all the lessons and do likewise. Blessed be and amen.